go for it.
Hello and welcome back to another episode of the Reliable Talk podcast. I'm joined by my fellow podcaster, fellow employee, Will Crane. How you keeping, Will?
Good morning.
Good morning. Morning. It's afternoon, mate.
Well, it's afternoon for us, but it'll be morning for them.
Oh, yeah, good point. Yeah, it will be good morning for them, won't it? All depends, actually, what time you listen to it.
That's very true.
But I just got to say as well, massive thank you, guys. And if you're actually watching this on the new platform on YouTube, we're going to wave and say hello, because we've now actually added some video to the audio as well. Obviously, if you're listening via Spotify, still you're going to get the whole experience for the audio. But we thought we'd add another dimension, and we really wanted to start a YouTube channel, really, because there's a lot of videos I want to do. There's a lot more talking points I want to do, but I want to do that in a way that we can actually visually show you some bearing defects, visually show you some actual spectrums in terms of case studies. And there's only, you know, we're limited to what we can do in just a podcast environment, so we're going to be creating extra content that has more of a visual aspect and element to it as well. But I just want to thank every single one of you for coming to the Reliability Gang, if you want to call it that, or the Maintain Reliability Gang, whatever you want to call it in terms of the hashtag. But we have actually hit 200 downloads.
It's impressive.
On the podcast. So I'm actually so happy. It puts a massive smile on my face to actually say their metrics, because I never actually thought it would pick up this much traction. And I'm really just happy to have everybody here. And I really feel like we've got a great community that surrounds the reliability people around LinkedIn and everybody within this community. And I'm really grateful to have you here. And as well, we've had a few more signups to the forum. So that's gradually growing, and I just want to just welcome you guys, that have, the newcomers that have come on board. We've had some great suggestions already, actually.
Yeah,
and it's definitely starting to pick itself up a little bit, which is great. You know, we're always very welcoming to new people to come onto the forum. We're very welcoming to new people as well, you know, who want to come and engage with our discussions and engage with our case studies, engage with what we've got to show. And as well, we'd love to see some of your personal problems or issues, or shall we say, exciting finds or any bearing defects as well. We're more than happy to be able to have a look at that as well. So, Will, what are we going to be talking about this week? What is this week's subject?
So, our topic for this week is discussing lubrication, especially after our, not incident, but our job the other week that we went to. We found a particular problem. So we want to discuss lubrication, what it is, and why it's so important.
Yeah, definitely, 100%. I think as well, you know, we as well, obviously from last week, from seeing the actual issue and getting to the root cause of the problem that we see in that bearing change and that we found from our initial vibration analysis readings, it's always good to get to the root cause, because it tells and it paints such a bigger picture to the initial point of failure as well. And obviously it teaches us and enables us to do better for the future and increase our reliability functions. But I think last week we did touch on this case study, and we're going to kind of sort of, you know, take from last week, but go into more of a lubrication practice and this description about what happened, why it happened, and why lubrication is so important, and some of the failure modes that can be caused by over lubrication and the failures that can be caused by under lubrication. So it is a very much a two-edged sword, really. You know, being in the middle of things can be sometimes difficult, and without the right tool to be able to, you know, for you to measure their metrics, it's very difficult for, you know, you guys to understand what practice is best, and if you're actually given the right sufficient amount of lubrication to your assets or bearings, or if you're actually given too much. And, you know, what we'll do, we'll give, put a few pictures on the screen soon, and we'll start to describe the defect. But I think first of all, Will, we've got to kind of describe and put it a bit more into layman's terms, like, what is lubrication? Why is it needed, mate?
Okay. Layman's terms, lubrication is really important on a rotating bearing, purely because metal on metal contact is just not good for a bearing. You know that friction just generated, it generates heat. So what we're trying to do with lubrication is create a barrier between the two metal surfaces, whether that be an oil film or through grease or oil itself. So if you look at a bearing under a microscope, it's actually really jaggedy. It's not actually a smooth surface.
Yeah.
So we want to try and take that jaggediness out so that bearing's got something to run along.
Of course, yeah. What we're trying to do is really try to engage a tiny film between the balls and the metal to metal, just to be able to take that pressure off. Because theoretically, if you look at it under a microscope, the ball and the metal to metal are not actually in contact when you've got a film of grease between the two. So that grease, obviously, or oil or lubricant, shall we say, is extremely important. In an ideal world, everything would be oil based, you know, but end of the day, oil cannot stay in a bearing, because we all know oil is very, you know, in terms of its viscosity, is very loose in terms of it running everywhere and it can't stay anywhere. So what grease actually is actually soaps and oils combined together to create a formulation with additives called grease. And that actually enables the oil to be kept in the film and into the grease, into the soap, create as one actual whole part of the actual grease itself that carries itself around the bearing that creates that film. And also it keeps it stable so it can stay where it needs to be. So this is so important in my mind in terms of what we do. But I kind of find within the industry, a lot of the problems that we get in terms of failures are directly down to poor lubrication practice. And it is a big problem, if I'm honest. But the thing is, I think it's the awareness, isn't it, Will, that we're kind of like, really, at the minute, not many people are aware that a lot of the problems and the reason why a lot of their plant or bearings or motors are failing is because of poor lubrication practice. So I think really our job as reliability guys in the industry and trying to raise awareness is try to make people aware, A, how important it is, and B, how can we keep on top of it so it doesn't become an issue or problem and affect our production lines and affect our, you know, our bottom line, essentially, as well. And as well, you know, we've got to understand what type of implications does it lead to and how can we overcome it. So there's different types of, obviously, lubrication. There's grease and there's oil. And grease is predominantly used within bearings. And, of course, there's different types of grease we can get as well. And different additives are added to different greases to give different properties of the grease. And these additives are different in different forms of different chemicals, which can give different properties to the grease depending on what you parameters you need to measure. So say, for example, you had an application that reaches extremely high temperatures, you'd have a high temperature grease to be able to deal with the ambient temperatures where it runs in. Some applications run a lot hotter than others, so you need to understand operating temperature and understand whether the grease is suitable for the application. As well as a lot of different types of additives like EP added properties as well that actually allow for more added pressure. So if you've got high load applications, EP grease would be more, so we say, better for that application as well. So I think as well, like a lot of the time we do grease things, a lot of the time we don't. But as well, are we using the right grease for the right application?
I mean, it's so easy not to, isn't it? It's like for these companies, it's so easy not to, because it's almost like, I think people see it as a bit of a dark art, or it's really easy to not have the understanding or training. You know, so we saw it at the customer, didn't we? You know, someone's told, oh, can you go grease that? So we just went and greased it
and
up.
How much as well? I always find this as well. I mean, we touched on it last week as well. How much is a shot of grease?
It's
is
so
that 5 grams? Is that 2 grams? Each gun will surely give a different amount to what one shot is.
We know for a fact, one of our customers, we use the 18-volt greaser automatic.
Yeah, which is actually
that
electronic.
Shoots off a lot more grease in each individual pump than
the one
pump does.
Exactly. And if you're not careful, that you could really get to the point where you're over-greasing and stuff. So as well, how are we measuring what we're doing? And are their measures even accurate in the first place? And I think that's the problem. This is the reason why. I mean, just right there, just them two questions is definitely going to identify the fact that there is an issue or problem with lubrication schedules if you're not looking it at a, shall we say, RCM perspective in terms of understanding the machine, understanding, you know, the parameters of the machine, the failure modes of the machine, understanding what grease should be used, which is derived from the RCM of understanding what type of conditions it runs in.
Yep.
And then understanding how much is needed. So a lot of the time manufacturers will give guides, but they are guides, because if you have a look at the actual equation for when you quantify how much a bearing needs, you've obviously got the, you know, the equation to understand the diameter, the size of the bearing, how much space is in there. But there's a lot of different factors derived by the conditions.
Well, you think a manufacturer will output a piece of equipment, a pump, a gearbox, a motor, but they won't know what application that's going in, what's it driving, what environment it's in.
Exactly, and that's the thing. A lot of the time, mate, I would say a massive change in terms of what you would grease is derived on the environment of what it's in.
Yeah.
And the manufacturer will not be able to define that. It will be able to give you a rough figure. So even if you're going by that manufacturer's recommendation, there's no means to say
that's
that is exactly right. I can promise you that, because even a vertically mounted machine yep. opposed to a horizontally mounted machine, will generate a hell of a lot more friction and a hell of a lot more load, which means you'd actually have to grease it probably up to 20% or 30% more, coming from the equation that I've kind of studied. I don't know how accurate that is. Obviously, it depends on other temperatures and other circumstances around that. But even temperature is a big one. Dust as well.
Well, we
environmental dust is hugely impactive in terms of how much grease something needs as
and
well.
And it's the ambient temperature as well that makes a difference. So if you've got, we had some gearboxes in my last place where they were up really high and were in an environment really hot, very hot. So normally, a normal application, the gearbox manufacturer stated it required this this oil.
Yeah, yeah.
But because of the fact that the environment it was in, it was on big steaming pans, we actually had to change the oil type because the ambient temperature was losing its viscosity.
Right, and viscosity is a major one, isn't it, in terms of oil?
Especially oil.
100%, yeah, and that's it. Any small changes in temperature, I mean, as soon as, I'd say, oil in a gearbox loses the viscosity, straight away you lose the oil film properties.
Your viscosity and your chemical, as soon as you lose even your chemical properties within that oil, all the viscosity, it's not doing its job properly.
It's not, 100%. And how many times do we see certain, you know, and this is where oil sampling comes in, and it is such an important service. And this is such an important way of understanding what condition your oil is, and whatever condition your oil is generally tells you what condition your gearbox is. Because it is the blood that goes around, you know,
and it's really
the cycle of the gearbox, isn't it?
You know, on a car, you regularly change your oil on a car. Now, that isn't always feasible in industry. You know, you might have a gearbox with, you know, 20,000 litres of oil in it.
Exactly.
It's unfeasible.
Yeah.
So
very true, very true.
We have to oil sample it, but people aren't.
That's the thing as well. And you know, sometimes we'll go to different places and we'll ask, you know, what is your plan of action in terms of this critical gearbox? How often do you change oil? How often do you sample? And a lot of the time, they won't even change the oil. It will literally be a run to failure type.
Yeah.
The only reason they'll know that the oil needs changing is the fact that the gearbox may have failed. And the failure cost of a gearbox, especially a large one, we know gearboxes are not cheap.
No.
It is so catastrophic and detrimental.
And
all from, remember as well, a oil sample does not cost a lot of money.
No.
And in terms of the return of investment of how much information you get back in that sample is so huge compared to the value of that gearbox. There's really no excuse to be doing oil sampling on your critical gearboxes, really.
And your point to failure on a critical gearbox that potentially the oil has lost its viscosity or whatever has happened to the oil, that point to failure can be very quick.
Oh, gosh. Yeah, I've seen it in industry. I'm sure you probably have as well for your critical high torque, high load gearboxes. Because as soon as that metal to metal happens, you haven't got a lot of time, really. And especially with your really highly loaded gearboxes, because as well, there's a lot of additives for EP protection in certain oils for high loaded gearboxes that add that protection. And as soon as the properties of that fail, then you're not protected against that
not
as well. And the thing is as well, once you start to get gear wear, it's too late.
You've past the point of return.
Yeah, exactly. And that's the thing as well. You know, if you can avoid having to replace a gearbox just by changing oil, you know, and the thing is, I get it as well. You don't want to be changing oil every week. No. But if you're sampling frequently enough, you're going to understand when
deterioration, can't you?
Exactly. You're going to be able to understand. You're going to be able to trend it as well. And it can give you so much more information in terms of the wear particles that you've got, you know, and this is where tribology comes into this sort of element of understanding, you know, your wear particles as well, in terms of depending what actual, you know, what actual, you know, component is wearing, whether that be bearing, whether that be iron,
that
be copper, you know, whether that, you know, which, you know, whether it be brass, which could be gear. And it's going to give you a lot of indication of the actual issue or problem within the gearbox. So really, that's secondary, though. Really, we want to be able not to see them elements.
No.
Really want to be able to change the oil when the condition of it or the viscosity is changing before you get to the point where you see them wear particles for whatever reason they are. And that's the real early stage element of understanding gear wear. Because remember, your vibration analysis is a later stage than what your oil is going to be able to pick up as well. You know, so you might be doing VA and the readings may be fairly low, okay, in terms of even your high frequency, your envelope readings, your acceleration readings. But there may be wear particles starting to happen on a really minute level where the oil has actually failed and you're not picking it up. Yeah. So Don't just rely on your vibration analysis to understand when to sample. I would say for your critical gearboxes, you need a good sampling routine, schedule before, you tackle it with vibration analysis as well. Definitely. Very important, I feel.
Yeah, I completely agree.
So, we're going to go over now the case study that we went over last week. We're going to throw up some pictures. So, Will, would you like to put up a picture of the actual bearing when we actually taking this out? So as you can see on the screen there, for you YouTube viewers, you'll be able to see the bearing. And as you can see, this bearing here is absolutely caked, isn't it, Will?
Massively.
And, this is not good. And here's a picture as well of the drive end now, which we're going to show you. And like we stated last week, this actually had a shaft grounding ring on, right? And as you can see, that grounding ring's not going to work anymore, is it, Will?
Absolutely caked in grease all the way around in those carbon brushes. It's just not going to do its job.
It's not, is it? And the thing is, this motor was actually, okay for about 5 years, feedback from the customer, since they fitted and installed the grounding ring itself. And before that, they were getting failures once every 3 months. And this is how catastrophically bad this particular rotor was generating these shaft currents. But the P to F curve, the point of failure, soon as this ring started getting filled with grease, was very quick, I feel.
Yeah.
Because within our vibration spectras, we see a vast high jump in outer race defects from very low readings.
It went very high quickly, readings.
Yeah,
it wasn't a gradual increase like you'd expect from a wear within a bearing. It was very much, I'm okay, I've got a problem.
Problem, higher, we need to change this bearing. And to be honest, towards the end, when we was listening with ultrasound, you could really hear
massively
the wear. And it was a very late stage of, failure modes as well. And we're actually getting this bearing cut open now, actually, aren't we? So
yep.
we'll have that information as well. We're going to put all this in a nice, juicy case study when we can. And we'll let you know, guys, when it's ready on the website. But as you can see, that was the reason for failure, okay? So when we looked back at these images and we looked back, we could see that there was way too much grease put into this mower. And why do you think that happened, Will?
Well, I know why it happened. Because we were there. But the reason in this case why it happened was lack of training. This poor chap that was greasing the motor, he didn't know what he was doing. He'd just been told, can you go grease it?
Yeah.
That was simply it. And it wasn't his fault.
No, it wasn't. He was quite intrigued to learn as well, wasn't it?
Massively.
He wanted to know, like...
And he had no idea. He had no idea what he'd done.
No, he didn't. He had no clue. And like, we wanted to learn. But then as well, this is where education for lubrication is really important. And this is something that we do as well. Okay, we do day courses on lubrication. So, there's no qualifications involved here. Like, I've got lubrication level one. There's nothing like that. But what we do, we go to site, we take a few of the critical guys or whoever's doing the job, and we really take them through the process of why it's important to lubricate.
It's
really
an awareness, isn't it?
It is an awareness course, and that awareness really genuinely actually makes them think, do you know what, this task is actually very important. And when you get empowered with that what you're doing is actually quite important, rather than thinking or assuming that it's just a like low priority task, you start to feel better about what you're doing. Because you've got that awareness and you're doing the job properly.
You have a
properly.
Bit of responsibility as well.
100%.
You're not just a grease monkey going around pumping whatever. No, there is some responsibility behind this. There is some importance behind it. You understand the machine better for it.
Of course, 100%.
And so you take care.
Exactly. And one of our customers last year, they invested in this course. And I honestly think from the awareness that we raised with the guys, that they have saved a lot more failures in terms of the practice
Massive.
And moving forward. And this is something, the return on investment is forever moving forward, because we can always suggest, we do lubrication schedules as well. So we'll go to site, we'll understand how much is needed and we'll put together schedules. But that can only really be measured if we're doing a vibration analysis alongside it, because there's no metric to understand whether, because we're making calculations based on bearing size. But like we said before, there's other parameters that really would affect how much grease is going in. And every single application that we look at is going to be different. It's never going to be the same similar cases. So you may have a size, a 6213 bearing in one mower operating at, 6 degrees ambient. And you might have exactly the same motor in a bearing in another room that's a lot cooler. both are not going to be. And the thing is, if we do our study without having the metrics of heat and ambient temperatures, which is a lot of information that we need to require to be able to do that. And to be honest, it's not something that is time effective to do, because can't go in every single room. Understand, no. Oh, is it dusty in here? What's the humidity? You know, there's too many metrics to go by to do that, you know, and it's probably not time effective, where condition-based lubrication would be a lot more efficient. But as well, we've got to try to understand, like, we can't take them factors into consideration when we do, like, a study to understand how much something needs. So we're really basing that gram, or how much grease is needed, based upon the bearing size, really, and the speed.
Yeah. Massively.
And that is still not to say that is exactly what that bearing needs.
No.
Because as well, you have to understand, we don't know how much is already in that bearing in terms of volume.
And that's why when we do some of the asset care on the kit we do, it's that little bit more, not precise, but you've got that more information, because we've got the ultrasound kit with us. We've got the analyzer. We can see directly the action we're doing. Is it enough? Put some grease in. I'll test it again. Yep. My noise floor's come down. Result.
We can actually measure by the noise of the bearing or the vibration of the bearing whether that film is there or is it not. It still doesn't let us know if there's enough in there.
No.
It will just let us know if the film's engaged. Because as soon as the film engages, the noise will drop. So amount-wise, we still don't actually know, you know, how much exactly is needed.
And there's only one way you really are going to get to that.
And that is basically continuous
auto
lubrication, but smart lubrication as well.
Yeah.
Because what we can actually do is actually monitor vibration constantly. Well, not constantly, but take more readings in the day. It's not constant vibration monitoring. It's taking a lot of different readings, and then put auto greases on the application as well. And that data we take over the month will let us know when the film is engaged, and that'll be able to correlate with the measure of how much we're putting in over time constantly. And then we'll be able to know when to gauge it and adjust it to know that bearing is in perfect film condition, but for its life.
As you know as well, with auto lubricators come another aspect of education in, you can't just slap them on.
We've seen it before, Will. You know, I had a customer before from my previous company where they just fit these things on everything, and they thought they'd do an answer to everything.
Yeah.
But what they actually then didn't have is a guy going around with a lube gun. So they didn't have actually any other, like, way of measuring as well, you know, whether...
Yep.
The actual auto lubes were okay or not. And they had a few that fail where the battery had gone, and had a couple of bearing failures. So in trying to prevent something, they caused it. And this is the thing as well. There's no substitute. We've always got to be vigilant on plant about how we check, you know, because you have to check even the reliability of the auto luber.
Yep.
So in trying to increase the reliability of the machine, that auto luber becomes a part of the reliability, a part of the machine. So we can't just leave it and let it go. And as well, these auto lubers were just constant battery operated as well. So when the machine stopped running,
they kept on going.
They kept on going. And we know that's not good practice. You know, we don't want to be trying to force grease into, you know, a bearing when it's not rotating. So the auto lubrication cases that we do have a 12 volt input. So when the machine turns off, so does the auto luber. We can understand that metric and we can measure it. And as well, what we have is a monitoring device on the auto lubrication application. And, you know, these auto lubers are more than the general ones. Of course they are.
Yeah.
But the value they give is tenfold. It's paramount. And really, in the grand scheme of things, when you understand the actual reliability of that machine, if it's a critical one, it's a drop in the ocean compared to what you get back in value of increasing the reliability of that machine.
Yeah.
And, you know, that's the important element here. We're trying to improve the reliability of things, you know, and try to understand the metrics. And it even has an online monitoring system on it where you can actually log into a portal and understand whether that lubricator is lubricating okay or not.
You can get a text on your phone, can't you, to set it down?
Exactly. So that takes the element away of this fear of it failing and actually then causing the bearing to fail because it hasn't got enough lubrication. Everything is put in place. And when you combine that with an online system as well, there really is not much that can, you know, frighten you. You know, when you've got that information and you've actually put these measures in place for the best possible practice.
You can be very confident in the sense that that machine is going to be monitored in a way that any potential problem can be captured
100%
before failure. so that that plant is running as reliable as possible.
100%. And that's what takes us on to, you know, what can you guys do to implement a better lubrication strategy? So regardless of what's happening, say, for example, on your plant at the moment, whether you have sort of planned PPM interval-based lubrication ways of doing things, or even if you haven't got something sort of, you know, strategic in place straight away, I'd say the first place, of course, where you could improve that element of what you're doing in terms of practice is just try to go back to manufacturer's recommendations of how much is needed within the bearing. And that's a starting place. You know, that's a good starting place. But be careful as well, because some manufacturers will tell you, for example, 40 grams every 6 months. And that measure, really, you don't want to be greasing something every 6 months, really, and putting loads of grease in it. You want to be doing
it once little and often.
I mean, we all know how it is. If you grease your bike chain every time you ride, you know it's going to have sufficient lubrication. If you leave it for 6 months, then pour and spray the hell out of it. You know, it's a lot of this is common sense, but you'll be surprised a lot of it is not done.
Yeah.
So we're kind of trying to inspire, you know, people to just try to take a metric from somewhere to begin with, if not. After that, I would say you can then start to get someone involved who can be able to measure what you're doing. So if you've not got any vibration analysis on site at the moment, vibration analysis is such an effective tool for understanding poor lubrication practice. Envelope readings that we take will scream at us if there is a dry race, because metal-to-metal contact will ring at a high frequency, and we've set up our collectors to be able to detect that instantaneously.
Yep.
And we can actually see when that film drops quite quickly as well. So if you haven't got any way to measure what the condition is of your plant, like vibration analysis on your critical assets, you may struggle to understand whether it needs lubricating or not if you're only just basing it on interval PPM data, because sometimes we all know that it may just require a couple more shots of grease to engage that film.
We saw it the other day. You know, I'm putting grease in, and I'm not seeing any drop in the analyzer. And I'm like, oh, you know, you have to judge it.
You do have to judge it. You don't want to overdo it, do you?
No. And I sort of went, right, based on our experience on this application, I knew it could take a little bit more. It's quite a large bearing. Put two more shots in.
Gone. And that's the thing, Will. What happened to the reading when you put the first three shots in?
It actually went up.
Yeah. It will go up, because what it's trying to do is trying to find that film. And I've got so much experience with this. I kind of know, I've just done it so many times. But it will increase initially. So you may think, oh my God, what have I done here?
Yeah.
But all you have to do is push through that barrier. But, you know, sometimes it's not always the case, because if something already is over lubricated, and what can sometimes happen when something's over lubricated is that the bearing gets so packed up, the grease can't actually move around the bearing and it can't engage. So then it starts to heat up. And what happens when it heats up is that the oil actually starts to separate out of the soap. So then all you're left in the bearing is soap.
You're not going to get anything else back in, are you?
No, exactly. But the problem is even with that, when you go to test again, it's going to look like you've got poor lubrication readings, right?
Yeah.
So maybe the analyst doesn't know or is not aware that this bearing is over-lubricated or is filled with soap, right? The readings are coming back on the collector as a high-raised floor. So that potentially could mean, it needs more grease. Analyzer comes, you know, the actual analyzer comes along with the grease gun, greases it some more. Do you know what I mean? More grease has got into the bearing. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Readings haven't fallen again. So you need to kind of know when to stop and think, actually, hang on, we've not had no effective change here. This bearing actually needs replacing.
Yeah.
Because, you know, there may not be any wear in that bearing yet, but there probably will be at some point because there's no sufficient film. But the reliability of that has actually decreased massively.
Because you've got no
way of maintaining a sufficient oil film in that bearing.
And the minute that it's like that, it's on the path to fail.
Yeah,
you can't reverse it.
100%.
Unless you take it apart and potentially maybe repack the bearing. But at that point...
Yeah, it's very difficult to do that with motor bearings. You can't.
No.
You know? And you'd change them anyway. By the time you took them out.
You
know, fan bearings and, you know, plumber block bearings, that can be done. And I have seen that done where, you know, the grease has done that.
You have to be so careful, though, not to include any, like, 100%. Foreign bodies in there.
It's not always great practice, but when you've got a very big fan,
Yeah.
And it, you know, you have to, you know, and that is nearest to the fan. You know what I mean? Taking that bearing off
is, big job.
Is a massive job. So I have seen that done as well. And, you know, to be honest, to its, you know, defense, it has worked in certain circumstances as well. So it has to, you have to be very careful. But then to avoid all of this is just to be able to create a good lubrication.
Have a good
schedule.
Understanding of the plant,
exactly.
A good lubrication schedule, and if possible, do it on condition.
Exactly. And that takes us to condition-based lubrication. So ultrasound, for me, is an incredible way to listen to whether a bearing needs lubrication or not. You can hear it. It has a great measure in terms of decibels, and as well, it operates at a high frequency. You know, 30K, that's what we, you know, actually measure with our UE gun on contact surfaces. And it's a perfect range to be able to really hear that race of that bearing. And you'll know when you've got a noisy bearing, and when you grease it, you can hear the difference. It is actually phenomenal that you can hear that. And because we can capture a really accurate decibel reading, and we can understand, you know, have the metrics of measuring something that is okay and well lubricated, we can take that reference, say, for example, 10 decibels is a good reference for a well lubricated bearing. And then once you measure something that is poorly lubricated, 50, 60 decibels, these are just examples, guys. I'm not saying this is, you know, like
exact,
but you can see there's a difference there.
You're going to see the difference between one and the other.
Exactly. And once you can start to understand what is good, what is bad, you can create your own alarm levels in terms of history of understanding what is good on plant. And what you can actually get by UE systems, which is incredible, they're called grease caddies, and they've got these little headphones as well that you can listen to the race that connect to your grease gun. And you can go around on your PPM scheduled lubrication tasks and grease upon condition.
It's like a sixth sense, isn't it?
This
noise is not something that you're going to be able to audibly hear without ultrasound.
Exactly.
You need to hear that high frequency noise that our ears just can't hear.
100%. And that's the thing as well. That's all we offer, really. You know, we've got equipment that can become the sixth sense. So let's use this technology, guys, you know, because it can give us so much information about condition, and especially like something so important like poor lubrication or over lubrication, for example. We can really get ourselves back into the driving seat of understanding what is going on with our machinery, and we can really actually start to increase the reliability tenfold of our whole plant. Because what is the study? What is the percentage of bearing failures again?
Let's have a look.
Let's have a look now. This is actually from SKF,
SKF state that poor lubrication accounts for over 36% of all premature bearing failures, which is a massive
amount.
Huge,
isn't it? It's massive, isn't it?
For lubrication, you know, when you think of all the failure modes that could potentially cause a bearing to fail, 36%, almost, what, a third? A third is down to the lubrication practices.
Exactly. And when we sort of maybe have a case study and look at all the sites that are doing lubrication, but probably not in the most efficient way, here is a massive area where we can all improve.
And
I think
improving lubrication practices, it's not a massive amount of investment.
No, but we can help people.
Definitely.
Do that. You know, we don't even take, all it is giving people A, the awareness, maybe with training, and B, a good strategy to be able to keep on top of it. And then when we can actually start to measure, which can be done with ultrasound or vibration analysis, we can actually really start to get ourselves back in control of that reliable factor.
And the measure is the key, because if you have no measure, you don't know what you're doing.
We need data, we need metrics, but we need to understand what it means as well.
Yeah.
And we can help, you know, guide people to understand that as well. So, you know, by all means, we've got the tools to be able to do that. And I think we understand it to the degree of actually really trying to promote the fact that it's something that is very important. And the case study we did just proves it. You know, it does. It proves the actual, you know, the proof is in the pudding. You know what I mean?
Definitely.
So, guys, that is anything you want to add to that, Will, in terms of lubrication?
No, I think we've covered quite a lot. And hopefully it's helped everyone listening to maybe get a bit of an understanding.
Yeah, I think so. I mean, I think all we're doing is, like, we'd love to hear your thoughts again.
If anyone has any questions regarding lubrication or experiences, again, utilize the
or any advice to us, guys. We may have missed stuff, you know. Like I said, we're no means the 100% experts in any field, you know. I think we just kind of talk on our own experiences, and we try to put that out there, you know, in terms of putting herself out there in terms of just talking about it. So if you've guys got any advice or any sort of experiences that you'd like to share, please get in contact with us through the forum. What a great place to be able to display these type of case studies and this great information. How can they find us, Will, on the forum?
Just go to www.conditionmonitoring.co.uk/forums. And it's a really great place. Please share your case studies, because you sharing a case study that you may have seen may help someone else. That's the idea of this forum. It's meant to be a place, a community. And, you know, we will, as and when we get time, put as much content we can as well, because you never know, someone might have a very similar bit of kit to you. You've prevented a failure and they can do the same thing for theirs.
100%. And that's what we're here to do. So yeah, guys, what we're going to do, we're going to link it below. If you're watching via the YouTube platform, please have a look below. The link is below. And please follow us on LinkedIn as well. Maintain CM on our company page. What we're going to try to do is put a lot more case studies out there. We really want to share this passion with the industry. You know what I mean? There's so much that we've done that is exciting that other, you know, engineers and reliability specialists as well can potentially learn from or, you know, add to. We'd really like to get you involved. So please add us on the LinkedIn page at Maintain CM. And yeah, please subscribe to the YouTube channel as well. This is probably the first video that's gone up as well. So we're going to be trying to do more content gradually as, you know, we get more time. We can't really give any promises on that yet.
No.
We're trying to just to focus on
the podcast.
We don't
want to promise anything and then let you guys down.
Of course not. No, we're going to try to grow it as we go. And yeah, we've got a lot more exciting news in the pipeline as well that we'll be soon uncovering as well, which is great.
2021 is going to be an exciting year.
All right, guys. Thank you very much for tuning in. And guys, have a great rest of your week. Take care.
See ya.